I'm a people watcher as well, so I know sometimes I'm out in public and, you know, I might just see people just milling about or having conversations or whatnot. Sometimes people, you know, they see me looking and, you know, it probably wears them out a little bit. But I kind of just take facial expressions and, you know, just the way people interact, kind of commit it to memory, almost like a file cabinet, and then I'm able to pull from those memories. Just, you know, because I don't have all the expressions and thoughts, you know, the same as everyone else. So, you know, I just kind of collect them, and then I, you know, use them and try to utilize it when I'm on set, on film set. And, you know, just really looking at the leading actors and entertainers that are, you know, out there winning awards, that they, you know, from performances that made them deserving. And so I pay a lot of attention to those guys and ladies that just watch how they perform and just try to keep up, really.
You know, I've always looked at, as far as being an actor, that to me, it's more than just winning awards, but having the acceptance of your peers, recognizing from your peers that they appreciate the time and effort and care that you put into, especially when you put in a role as far as working on a biopic, someone like Mike Shipnight, that has so many different layers to who he is, right, and what he, quote unquote, that's being televised through various rag magazines, so to speak. What did you do mentally to get yourself prepared to play this part?
Well, one of the biggest things was, you know, we're both about the same size, like height and size. I had to put on a couple pounds to play, take on the role. But, you know, but as far as, you know, being the same, you know, around the same height and a very broad build, you already have the mentality that kind of comes with it, you know, growing up and interacting with people. So, you know, we already related in that aspect. And then fortunately, I was around people that really knew him and people I could, you know, ask for advice or consult with for, you know, to really try to get into the personality of him. So that was the biggest thing, and, you know, studying interviews and stuff like that, just watching facial expressions and all that good stuff.
I think a lot of people have such a misconception or perception of what a person is as far as what the media portrays them to be, because I've always said we have so many different layers to who we are as far as what we represent. And the reviews that I've heard back is that you put so many different dimensions in this character that people really didn't get an opportunity to really see and straight out of Compton. For you, how important was it for you to give people a different look, an overall look, of who Suge Knight really is?
Well, the biggest thing, I think, is the attitude that I approached the project with concerning Suge. You know, when you're playing somebody real, you know, you have to, you're different from when you're playing a fictional character. Nobody knows anything about that character until they see, you know, your interpretation of that character. You know, that's the first time they see it, so all they have to base it on is what you deliver. When you're playing, you're portraying real people, especially people out in the public's eye, they already know what this person looks like, sounds like, how they walk, how they behave, or at least they have a general idea. So my goal wasn't to just, you know, be a big, bald, light-skinned guy with a beard, being aggressive. You know, my goal was to be, I wanted people that don't know Suge Knight to be like, wow, you know, that if I had to guess how Suge Knight is, I would guess that was it. But I also mainly wanted, I wanted people that really actually knew Suge Knight or know Suge Knight to look and say, wow, he must have really studied Suge, because that's the Suge we know, you know, and not just what the media portrays, because that's not what you get in this film. You get some of that. You know, Suge was an extremist. You know, he's either extremely good or extremely bad. And so you see different, that comes down with the multiple layers. You know, so you had to go from one aspect to the other comfortably. But, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, I wanted people, his family members, you know, he's got almost grown children out there and, you know, friends and family that I wanted to not look and say, man, that's not Suge. You know, I wanted them to look and say, you know, wow, you know, you can tell he did his due diligence. And because he's not just the Suge the public knew, but he's also the Suge that we know. You know, that's what I wanted to accomplish.
It's interesting that you said that, and I use this analogy, I think, for us as men, that we have, it's a challenge for us to balance who we are as far as emotionally. You know, we're trying to micromanage our emotions. We're either way extreme we're somewhere in the middle. I mean, it's just overall life. And reading about you and getting a lot more pertinent information about who you are, not just as an actor, but as a man, it seems to me, from the outside looking in, that you were thoroughly set mentally for the challenge, not just portraying this role, but just to take it to another level, not just being an actor, but also being a writer. Can you give the listeners out there, as far as your aspiration, as far as improving on your writing skill and being behind the scenes and actually directing some movies?
Well, yeah, actually, that is, you know, part of being an actor and a writer. I'm also a producer, something we're rolling into next. You have to, it all really comes from vision, you know, so that's why it's funny you should say that as far as directing, because once I was able to sit down and write my first full script. Because before that, I had many ideas for films. But I just never had the patience to sit down and really, truly complete a film. People don't give screenwriters enough credit because, you know, when I dove into it and said, you know what, I'm really going to go all the way this time, I'm going to do it properly, and I'm going to finish it. And once I got into that process, I had to stop about a month into my first script, I had to stop. And I said, okay, this is obviously not going how it should be going. So then I, you know, took the time to step back, start doing my reading, my researching, speaking with other screenwriters I knew. My mother's a screenwriter. And so, you know, I just started consulting with people and, you know, just studying, basically. And then I realized I was doing it all wrong. So you got to have more than just a good idea. You also have to have, they have an actual formula. They have multiple formulas. And so you got to be able to, you know, make those formulas happen. And so that's what I did. I studied and then used, basically, like I said, it all spawned from, you know, just having a vision, which leads to eventually directing, where I can, you know I can write screenplays now. I wrote my very first one, I wrote it, and I was blessed enough to sell that one, which I heard was, you know, it's rare that you sell your first script, so I was thankful for that. And so then my next step will be, you know, I have other scripts that I've written now, because once you get the first one done and you look back and say, I can really accomplish that, then the next ones are easier to get through. And so I've written a few others, teamed up with some, you know, friends of mine and whatnot, also in the industry. And, you know, the next step is to produce a film. And then after that, I think I'm going to go ahead and go for the whole write, produce, and direct. And so I can get my exact vision that I want to get across.
You know, I want to talk about, actually expound a little bit on what you just said, vision. Because I know a lot of actors out there, ethnic backgrounds, they have a tendency, with their being typecast, to portray one particular part, and they lose control as far as, hey, look, there's more to me than what you see in this one particular film. And a good friend of mine said the best thing you can do is be a screenwriter or a director, because then you have complete control over what you put out and how your character or the characters that you choose to be in the film, how they're depicted. How important is that for you to have that kind of level of control over what you put out and what you promote?
It's very important. It's super important. And like your friend said, I mean, it's so true. And if you're as a minority in this business, it's also important to, you know, if you can, not add to stereotypes and, you know, other things that, you know, you don't like to see how our people are portrayed. So that was very important for me, and one of the motivations in this first script that I wrote, that I sold, and it was made into a movie, is called Mr. Right. And one of the things that I loved about Mr. Right was I purposely wrote it not only to be, you know, a good movie and entertaining, but I wanted the characters involved to be people of substance, you know, educated people, cultured people. Even though they had their own, you know, their own little drama going on romantically, etc. But it was important that the characters have a lot of substance and not just be stereotypical, you know, in the hood and this and that. No, they were people who were well off, educated, you know, intelligent, and had money, had careers and all that good stuff, and just living life and having regular life struggles, you know, relationships and whatnot. And one of the biggest compliments is, I wrote it that way, not knowing that people would really realize it, you know. And I've got messages from, you know, on social media from all over, mainly from women saying, hey, I just want to say thank you for the way you portrayed us in your film. You know, a lot of films don't, you know, worry too much or put a lot of importance on how, you know, especially black women are portrayed. You know, black men as well, but, you know, that's becoming a little more progressive. You know, how black women are portrayed is still something that needs to be worked on. And, you know, I have sister, mother, aunts, you know, whatnot, women that I wouldn't like. I want them to have something they can relate to. You know, little girls watching, seeing a successful writer or, you know, successful doctors, etc. So that part, I was able to get that part of my vision out through the film, even though I didn't direct it. But I realized I felt it was important. But that made it even more important when other people, you know, from all over the nation spoke on it, you know, contacted me and sent me those messages just saying thank you. So I know people noticed this stuff. And that was a confirmation that, okay, Dominic, you're not crazy. People, there are black women sitting at home wondering why are we portrayed this way, you know, or black men or Hispanic men, or Hispanic women, or, you know, any minority wondering, well, why are we portrayed this way? Where are the movies or the filmmakers that portray us, the doctors, the lawyers, the writers, the, you know, pastors, the whoever? And so realizing that, you know, I realized even more how important it really is. And so that's part of my motivation. You know, I've been that way as an actor. I could have done, there's a lot of roles that I, you know, I won't speak on too many of them, but there's a lot of roles I could have done or that I was the first one chosen. But one of the things that, you know, my agents have always, it always has driven them crazy, but I'm very big on, I'm not just taking any kind of role. I'm not taking stereotypical roles. If you want to, you want me to play a gangster, or you want me to play, you know, something crazy, it has to be something like where Denzel played American Gangster or Training Day. Yes, he was a bad guy. American Gangster, he was a major drug dealer, but there was a lot of substance to his character, a lot of history to it. It wasn't just, we're just throwing you in here, you're a drug dealer. Well, what's the point of this character? Oh, there isn't one. We just want to put a drug dealer in there. You know, we need to have a black guy in the movie. We want to make a black guy. Why? Well, there's no reason. We're doing it. Because that's, you know, it's like, okay, what are you saying? You think all black people are drug dealers?
You know, the status quo.
Yeah, in this industry, you really got to check people sometimes. Like, right. You know, hey, that's not all we are. You know, that's not what I am. That's not what my uncles are. That's not what my brothers are. You know, so I've been very careful as far as everything you do in film is there forever. You know, you can't go back and, you know, take it back. You can go all the apologize you want, talk about how much you've grown since you first started, but your people are still affected by it. So you have to be mindful of all this stuff when you're taking on roles, especially major roles, to where, okay, when I do this, my family is going to see it. My son, I have a 4-year-old son, you know, my son's going to grow up and see this. You know, other people's sons are going to see this. And, you know, if that's, you want your children relating to that, you know, or, you know, I don't want that to be, you know, the case. So I've done my best to shy away from roles like that that have no substance and they're pointless. And, you know, I try to switch it up, you know, like I'm doing this. I did this role with Suge Knight. Maybe there's some talk about maybe reprising this role again. But, you know, for the most part, I'll come, you know, some of the stuff I got lined up is like completely opposite, you know. So I try to mix it up and represent it all.
Absolutely. One of my favorite actors is Jeffrey Wright. And the reason why I fear him so much is because he has such versatility as being an actor.
Yes.
You can put him in any situation and he adapts to it like fish to water. And listening to you speak, it reminds me of something that Tim Reed said, because when Tim Reed got into the business, for those who are, and I'm dating myself a little bit, Tim Reed, very, very gifted actor, and a lot of people are familiar with him, WKRP in Cincinnati. My God, I'm really dating myself. That's all right. That's all right.
Hey, I used to watch that.
And he had the same mentality, having control as far as how he was being depicted as an actor. Yes, not just being put in a movie to be a quote-unquote stereotypical ethnic background, saying, hey, we're gang members, we're drug dealers, we're this and that, we're this, we're lowlifes. And I think it ends with us wanting more for ourselves.
Yeah.
For you, as far as, and I want to touch upon as far as the playwright, because I think that's so, so important. I think some of the greatest movies that have been written on very small and very limited budgets are the ones that are raw. What kind of passion do you have when you're just sitting there really focused on something that you're really feeling, that you're really writing on, and your heart is really involved in it?
Well, you know, one of the things that where I start from the project is, I'm real big on when everybody's going right, I go left. When everybody's going left, I want to go right. And that's how you stand out, when you're just doing something way different than what everybody else is doing. Because Hollywood, it tends to someone will set a trend and then everyone will kind of jump to that trend. And I think a lot of people that's trying to grow and try to get known for their talent, I think a lot of people miss the mark trying to follow those trends or be a part of it. Instead of saying, okay, everyone's doing that, if I'm doing this, then I'm going to stand out way more. So that's what I look at. I look at the content of the subject that I'm writing on and say, is this something that's saturated, or is this something that I can take it and present it in a new angle that hasn't really been done, you know, or that people aren't doing. So that's the first thing I do to try to make it stand out. Then, like I said, the other thing is, you know, I want it to be entertaining. I want the audience to enjoy it, because no matter, you know, what your motivation behind it is, if people don't enjoy it, people won't see it. You know what I mean? So, you know, one of the biggest things is making sure people are entertained by it, making sure they're the best. You can never go wrong when you leave a good message in your film, whether it's funny, whether it's action, whether it's drama. When you attach yourself to people's heart, they'll never forget it, and they'll always return back to that film. And you do that by having some kind of a message in it. Not just a movie that's just there to make you laugh or there to be entertained. And then, you know, you move on and you forget about it. But when you put a message in it, people, they relate back to that film or things from that film. You know, in times that, you know, it may be like you write a movie about someone's mother dying from cancer, and that's what the movie is about, and you leave a good, strong message in it. Then, you know, people are going through it. I've seen it happen many times where people actually are going through that in real life, and they'll attach themselves to a movie like that and watch that movie over and over and over and over. And then if you're fortunate enough to run into them, you know, they'll stop you on the street and they'll tell you. I mean, I'd say the most extreme case was a young lady. I was in this mall in Charlotte, North Carolina, with a friend of mine, and, you know, she just happened to be walking by herself, and she looked at me and saw me. She basically, like, collapsed into my chest and started crying. So everyone around us is looking at me like, what did I just do to her? And I'm confused, too. I'm lost, like, I have no clue. I have no clue what's going on right now. And right. She cried for about a good five, ten minutes. And then finally, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, excuse me. What's going on? Like, what happened? I thought somebody threw something at her or something. I don't know. And so, you know, she looked up at me and she said, you know, I did this movie, a little silly movie around 2009 called Love Herself with Maya and Jackie Long and some others. And, you know, even though that movie was just silly as can be, it was still an entertaining movie. It was funny, but at the time when that movie came out, it came out, debuted on BET. And BET, I think they tried to break a record with network spins with that movie because they constantly played it. But this young lady, her mother was dying at the time, and her mother couldn't really, you know, she wasn't mobile. She couldn't really leave the house and stuff like that. She was pretty much bedridden. And during that time, she said that was the only movie that could make them laugh, even though it was a depressing time. So they just watched that movie over and over, you know, when her mom could. And they watched it together. Well, her mom sadly instantly passed away. And so because they watched that movie together all the time, that became her way of finding some solace or finding, you know, being able to have that memory and kind of, you know, have a little bit of happiness. So she, you know, would continue to watch the movie, you know, by herself now. And so when she saw me, you know, now you relate me to the character, to the film itself, and to what that film has become to you. And so when she saw me, she broke down crying because, you know, of course she never thought she'd meet me or see me just walking in the mall. But she gave me that story, and I think that was the first time I really realized the power of film. You know, so I've been a lot more conscious of what I do and the type of content I create now that I really see the effect that you can have on people.
Like Stan Lee once said, with great power comes great responsibility. Absolutely. When I look at movies like Eve's Bayou, my goodness, Have Plenty, and Fear of Black Hats. Independent films, but great movies. Great films. Great films. there's so much high expectation on all eyes on me. The industry has been a buzz. They have been waiting for this for years. I mean, for a long time since Tupac passed away. And now here we are.
I was one of the people waiting on it.
We're right here. We're right here at the crossroads getting to this. I don't like to use the term pressure because I think pressure is related to pipes. We're not pipes. We're not going to bust. We can handle what's put in front of us. For you personally, what are your expectations for the movie? What do you think the viewers are going to get as far as the feedback?
Well, it's kind of funny because the pressure, I don't feel the pressure now. I felt the pressure in the beginning when we first started.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm a huge Tupac fan already. Like, that's my favorite rapper, has always been my favorite rapper since I was a lot younger. And probably always will be. Because he, you know, his music was not only entertaining, but he had a lot of music that had some really powerful messages. And I'm big on that. So, you know, I loved everything Tupac. And so I was one of those people also, you know, waiting, wondering, when are they going to do a Tupac biopic? And then I was fortunate enough, you know, to be cast as Suge Knight, unexpected. I never knew while I was waiting on it that would happen. But, you know, that's even more exciting to as big a fan as I am to be not only in the film and involved with it, but to be involved with it in such a major way was like, you know, a bucket list dream, you know. So the pressure in the beginning, I also, as a huge fan, I know that I have a good idea of the following that Tupac had. And I knew that if it was not done right, whoever did it was going to get raked across the coals if that movie wasn't done right. So that's where the pressure came in for me, was showing up, you know, to set the first day and, you know, the first week, like, oh God, please, you know, please let everybody be on point. Let this be real. I'd already told myself that this is some foolishness and is, you know, not being cared for like it should be. I'm going to walk. You know, I'm not even, we'll deal with whatever, but I'm not going to be historically tattooed to this film if it's, you know, if it's not in good hands. And so that's where my pressure was. As we got into it, you know, as I started getting to work with Demetrius, who plays Tupac, Angela Gibbs is someone that they put with him from before we started to the entire project, constantly coaching him and keeping him in the mind frame of Tupac. She's an excellent acting coach as well as an actress. And she had him right. And I mean, you forget sometimes, you're like, I'd have to step back and look sometimes and just watch him move and how he behaves and talk. And was like, wow, he really, you know, you would have thought he got to sit with Tupac and spend time learning. Like, that's how deep they went with it. And so I was like, okay, you know, they got the right to, you know, this is the main thing. You can mess up maybe a few people, but Tupac, you cannot mess up Tupac. And so, fortunately, like I said, Demetrius exceeded, you know, anything that I could have hoped for. And that role for me, playing Suge was fun. But had I had his role, that would have been the scariest role to have, which is portraying Tupac. So, you know, my hat's off to him because he took it on like a champ and, you know, went hard with it. But yeah, in the beginning, once I got around LT Hutton, you know, one of the lead producers, and David Robinson from Morgan's Creek, and I saw how serious those guys were, you know, about perfection. Everything, Benny Boone, the director, I mean, my God, his attention to detail. I don't think I've met a more detail-oriented director, and I've worked with some big ones and some unknown directors, but really talented. But Benny Boone is just his vision, how he saw things, and when he looked through those cameras or the monitors of the cameras, and he would just see things that nobody else would see. And you'd be like, how did you even notice that? So, you know, even from, you know, fixing collars to, you know, just some of the things that you would think nobody would even notice. Benny was on every single detail, and you could tell his heart was in it. And LT, you could tell LT was fighting. You know, if somebody, well, I think we should do it this way. And LT's like, no, this is the real Tupac story. We're not making up anything for entertainment. We're not switching up anything, and it's real story. Everything's got to be real. And, you know, LT was there with me started his career at Death Row and with the Dogtown. And, you know, so he was around Tupac and Suge and all the Death Row stuff going on. He really was there. He lived it, you know, all the way up until now. You know, so he could sit there and say, nobody could really argue with him, you know, from anybody who wasn't there, and say, well, you know, this would be, we think it would be more entertaining to do it this way. And he's like, no, this is how it's got to be, period. And so just to see that passion and to see how involved, and you can tell this is his baby. He lived it. He's still living it 24/7, 7 days a week. LT Hutton is full man living. He pops up early in the morning. That's all he's doing. Tupac, you know, dealing with the film, all eyes on me, everything, and it has to be perfect. And once I saw these guys, and, you know, the DP, and Joe Cox is the editor, and, you know, just all the cast and crew, everybody out there, the other thing that kind of blew my mind is just no matter what color anybody was, no matter what age group people were, because they were the younger ones, there were older people working, you know, depending on whatever positions they were, everybody there knew who Tupac was. And everybody there appreciated or loved Pop. You know, there wasn't anybody on there. I heard some people say, like, you know, because some days were really long, hard days, you know. And I heard some people say, you know, little comments I would hear on the side. But some people like PAs or, you know, others just say, like, man, we're on the 10th hour. Man, they better be glad I love Pop. You know, just things like that. It really made me appreciate the cast and crew, all the way down to the extras. I mean, the extras, you would have thought that they had some starring roles in the film because they took, being an extra, they took it that serious. And the things people were saying, like, man, we gotta do this right for Pop. You know, we gotta go hard for Pop. And this is what we were surrounded by every day. And so, you know, the more and more we went along, and the way I seen it being taken serious, and the fact that they spared no expense on whatever was needed to make that movie look great. So once I seen all that and how it was being handled professionally, then I got real comfortable and I was able to work feeling really good about what I was doing. And so now to get to the end of it, you know, now I have no pressure because I already know people are going to go see the movie anyway just because of Tupac. You know, I already knew that, you know, the money is going to be made, that it's going to do the numbers anyway, but I feel that people are going to go back and see it two and three times because when they go and see it, they're going to sit back and go, whoa, this is actually really good. You know, this is a classic. And the quality of it, and just everything, the quality from the actors and actresses to all the crew members and the directing, the this. It's not just going to be a regular movie. It's not just watching things happen. It's not everything you saw in the media. It's focused more on Tupac the person. You know, the things you didn't know, the things you didn't see. So people are actually going to learn things about Tupac, Death Row, people in Tupac's life, family. But the most important thing about it is it has a message. It's very Tupac-ish. You know, everything Tupac did, especially in the latter part of his short life, was big on delivering a message. He was saying something. He wasn't just rapping. He was saying something. And they did this movie is in the same vein as it's like Tupac speaking again, because the message you come away from is so strong and it relates to so much of what's actually happening right now. You know, the things that's going on in the nation with, you know, some of the situations with some police brutality or equality and fairness and, you know, just things like that coming to a head. This movie is kind of falling right into that that category, becoming like a spokespiece for that whole movement. And it's like, wow, that wasn't planned. You know, so of course we don't want to see anybody get hurt, but it's like, you know, it just lined up the way it was supposed to. And so I'm not only a part of a great film, and not only part of a film that's going to be huge, but I'm a part of a film that, you know, will basically head up a movement and deliver a strong message, not to just black people, but people of every race, color, and creed. You know, and I can feel proud about that. You know, not right now, because my son is 4, you know, but later on, he can watch that and say, my dad was a part of that, and I'm proud of that. You know, absolutely. So I'm proud of that.
Absolutely. You know, I can't believe it's been, what, 20 years since he's left, man. I got to back sometime. I'm like, wow, it's been that long. And we've been, like I said, we've been waiting a long time to have this biopic album being done right. And from what I'm hearing and the feedback, it's going to be on a whole nother level. So I know when it finally hits down, I believe it, but it opens what, in November, if I'm not mistaken.
I can't speak on the official. I leave that to the producers to drop the official. But all I say is, of course, the 20th anniversary is coming up. Yes. What would be a better time? What would be a better time than that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And to get all the latest updates, of course, from Mr. Dominique L. Santana. Hey, stop by and support this very talented brother. You can stop by at his Instagram page. That's at Instagram official Dominique Santana. Also on Twitter at Dominique Santana. And man, that's on imdb.me/Dominique Santana to get all the latest updates. Man, it was an honor and privilege for me to have you on the show, that you took the time out of your schedule to join us, man. And whatever you need, please do not hesitate to let us know, man. We definitely support you, and there's no doubt in my mind, man, you are definitely going to take the Suge Knight character to a whole nother level. I have no doubt in my mind about it.
I appreciate it. And I appreciate you guys. I'm honored to be talking with you.
Much continued success, and next time when I go on IMDb, I expect to see another film with you producing it, man. That's what I'm waiting on. I want to see another film.
Oh yeah, we got my production partner Station Beats. We got a whole bunch of different things in the mix. Very very business oriented. I'm already an entrepreneur, and so that's my mentality going into this. Is just using my continued growth in business and success and putting it into, other things, bringing forth, our vision and projects that we have in mind for the world. So, yeah, it's only the beginning.
Absolutely. Wait a minute. Okay, better late than never. We're going on the line. Absolutely. We have a caller calling in from area code 702. You're on the line with Mr. Dominique L. Santana, Teddy Bear. Caller, what is your question? Go right ahead.
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. My name is Pastor Don Jr., CEO of the Entertainment Worldwide Network. I'm calling from sunny Las Vegas. I have a radio network that goes out to 1.5 million listeners, and we're syndicated in 24 AM and FM radio markets. Mr. Santana, I am so pleased to be on the show with you. I'm a big, major Tupac fan. This is my question. My question is, with all the controversy going on in the world and with the media and with the climate of where hip-hop music has changed and stuff, how do you feel with your portrayal of the role of Suge Knight being one of the intricate major figures in hip-hop? How do you feel that's going to speak volumes to the fans of the new age Death Row? Because Death Row kind of took a change when Pac and Biggie had died. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. How people portray things from some in the world is always difficult to kind of gauge. Hopefully they get, the gist of, what the message was, and get to take a little sneak peek into what it was during that time. Death Row, aside from, some of the craziness that the media decided to focus on, that was only really 10% of Death Row. There was a whole 90% of working hard, breaking barriers. And I hope that's something that people get to see as far as what these men came together and did at a time, we're talking about the early 90s, during a time where, it was virtually unheard of to even see, black men owning labels or black men having that kind of power and entertainment. And you got Suge, and he brought on, Dre and Snoop and Tupac and others that really came and shook the system, which also broke barriers. So I hope people decide to focus on that and understand what happened in that era, especially for minorities wanting to own businesses in entertainment, and just really not taking no for an answer and really deciding this is what we're going to do, and it's going to get done by any means necessary. Now, I don't suggest or the message of certain things. But the attitude is what I hope people walk away with, is to get it done by any means necessary in an intelligent and a dignified way.
Can I ask one more question, please, Mr. Radio Host, sir? This is a really good question. The acting process is so hard, and I have 40 artists that's on the winning team, and they all across the country. They should be calling in. We just got it over to the viral department. But could you kind of talk to some of my artists that want to be acting and kind of let them know some of the things you had to do on the research and getting prepared behind the scenes before you actually took on this iconic role?
Well, I say the biggest thing that you can do in this business, I run into a lot of people that they want to know how to get in the business, or it's interesting for them to get in the business. But, you know, I'd say out of 10 of those people, only really one or two are actually really serious about wanting to be in the business, because that's exactly what it is. It's a business. And I compare, you know, sometimes I do some acting coaching in the business. And I compare it to, I always say, it's like an apple tree. There are, you know, 2,000 apples on this tree. And what this business does is, as you go up levels, that tree gets shook. And it gets shaken more and more violently as you go. And a lot of apples fall off. Now, when you look up and you see three apples on that tree left after all the shaking, that's your stars. Those are the people who endured and pushed past it and took every role seriously, constantly preparing, constantly rehearsing monologues by yourself, honing your craft. It's a business. You got to treat it as a business. You are your own company at that point. And so if you take it serious like that and continue to grow, I would suggest your artist to find a good acting coach or, you know, acting teacher for film and spend time working with that person, because they can pick out things about you and help you sharpen your craft and just continue to move forward like that. And continue to read. You got to read and broaden your horizons and broaden your mind, because how can you say, well, you know, I'm an actor. Well, if you're an actor, that means you could play anybody. Well, if your mind is closed, how could you play anybody when you don't even know half of, you know, what's going on out there in the world, or different cultures, different people? So you got to really continue to try to grow. As long as your mentality is, I want to grow every day somehow. That's how I am. To the day I die, I want to look back on the day before and say I grew in some way, whether it's reading something, doing something new, having great conversations with, you know, people from other cultures, or other countries, whatever. Do everything you can to continue to grow, and just take it serious and don't quit. It's going to get hard. It's going to get harder than anything you ever done before, but you got to be willing to say, no matter what happens, I'm not going to stop until I succeed in it, you know, and that's how you get there.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, that's the perfect analogy for life in general. Anything worth having is worth putting in the necessary work and time to make sure that you're able to obtain it. I think a lot of times we have a tendency to take shortcuts. We want the brass ring, but we're not willing to do the necessary work to get the brass ring. I call it, we live in a quote unquote microwave society. We want it quick, fast, and hurry. It's not like when we had popcorn at home, you had the cast iron skillet, and you had to make it. It took time for the popcorn to be right. But when it was right, it was right. And that's one of the things that I find so impressive about you as far as your acting, because it's easy to go out there and say, I'm going to do this, but it's very hard to sit up here when you say, I have my mind together. I have a focus. I have a goal. I have direction, because you plan your work and you work your plan. A quitter never wins. And a winner never quits. Lord have mercy.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, how do you want to be remembered? I said, you know what? Let's go 15 years down the line. What do you want people to say about Dominic Santana as an actor? And not just an actor, but also as a humanitarian.
I want them to say, you know, I want it to be obvious that people can look and say, now there's a man, you know, and there's a man who cared about not only his family, but he cared about his people and people, period. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I'm very big on using, you know, and I encourage my other entertainers and celebrities to do the same, but to use your voice. You have a power with your voice. The more successful you become, and the purpose is to use your voice for the voices, not just for yourself, but, you know, you're part of humanity, you're part of a particular culture and race, and you have to use that voice to help some way. You know, you can use that celebrity to help people in some way, and you got to remember your purpose. Out there doing all this stuff and you don't have any purpose, then it's all for nothing. It's pointless. You won't be satisfied. I have money, I have toys, I have, you know, all kinds of great things. None of that brings me true joy. It's a bonus. The true joy comes from finding ways to give to others or to help people, to use your talent, to be able to put yourself in position to uplift somebody else. That's where you find the joy at. And that's the same thing I'll pass to my son, and I hope that's what people get from me.
You know, it's a beautiful feeling, man, when you're a parent, but not just a parent, but when you're a father. No matter what you go through the day, and you come home, and you see that little person there, that, hey, you're not the actor, dad.
you're right, dad. Exactly. That you hear that.
You know, even now, my son, you know, him being a teenager now it's like when I come home from work, come from the studio, it's like, you know, what's going on, Pops? How's everything doing? It's not radio personality. It's Pops. You know what I mean? It's a beautiful feeling to have that kind of support system and have that kind of unconditional love. And, man, again, like I said before, I have nothing but the utmost respect for you. This is definitely your home. Whatever you need from me, man, please do not hesitate to let me know. It's definitely been a privilege to have you on the zone.
Most definitely. You got to have me on again down the road. I'd love to, you know, check in with you guys and speak again.
Absolutely, man. So it is written, so it shall be done. The incredible Mr. Dominique L. Santana, my brother. Much continued success, and we're looking forward to All Eyes on Me.
I appreciate you, and the same to you all as well.
All right. God bless. Man, it's a beautiful thing. Of course, Dominique L. Santana, to get all his latest information and latest updates, pertinent information, catch up with him on Instagram. That's at instagram.com/official Dominique Santana. And also on Twitter at Dominique Santana and imdb.me/Dominique Santana. Got a lot more to get into. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the zone, the comfort zone. Get into some Kanye Doss with Coffee here on LOTO Radio.
Thought I knew you well, I didn't know you at all. You took me to the highs, to the highs, to the highs, to let me fall. You were like sunshine, turned to rain. A double shot of ecstasy with a taste of pain. I know that you're glad you ain't treated me right. I just can't quit letting you hit when you call me now. And even when you say that you can't say, oh baby, that's okay. I know you got to move on before you put your shoes on this morning. Get this groove on. You're alive, you're alive. Keep it going. I know, your life drink me along, la, maybe one day I'll be strong enough, and maybe one day I will wise enough, and stop telling your game to stop, but not right now. Catch me up and talk and I can suck up the love. I'm just another ticket to the planet. But I'm too.